Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our three-day series on health by focusing on our diets. There is so much research out on the benefits of eating a plant-based or a plant-rich diet. 6 in 10 adults in the United States have a chronic disease, and 4 in 10 have 2 or more chronic diseases, according to the CDC. A plant-centric diet can lower the risk of many diseases, including cancer, heart diseases, and strokes. A plant-based diet can also play a big role with menopausal symptoms and arthritis. A recent study published in the American Journal of Medicine found that a plant-based diet improves vaccine efficacy against COVID. Healthcare workers in 6 countries who had the Pfizer vaccine revealed that those following largely plant-based diets had 73% lower odds of developing moderate to severe COVID compared with those following other diets. So what questions and comments do you have about plant-based diets and adding more fruits and vegetables to your diet? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We do know that access is a major problem, so we will also discuss food deserts and ways to improve access to healthy food. Joining us are 2 plant-based doctors. Dr. Milton Mills practices critical care and internal medicine in the Washington, D.C. area and is a member of the board of directors of Plant-Based Prevention of Disease. Their conferences explore how plant-based eating patterns and lifestyle changes may reduce the risks of society's major preventable diseases. Dr. Mills is former associate director of preventive medicine and national advisory board member of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Hi, Dr. Mills. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you. Dr. Neil Bernard is adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine in Washington, D.C., and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit that promotes a plant-based diet, preventive medicine, alternatives to animal research, and encourages what it describes as higher standards of ethics and effectiveness in research. In 2015, Dr. Bernard was named a fellow of the American College of Cardiology, and in 2016, he founded the Bernard Medical Center in Washington, D.C., as a model for making nutrition a routine part of all medical care. Hi, Dr. Bernard. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Well, we should say that you both have done really important work together. Back in 1999, you and your colleagues worked on a study to look at the racial bias that led the U.S. government to push for dairy products. And out of that effort came a 2-part paper that was called Racial Bias in U.S. Food Policy. You both also worked to push the U.S. government to change the food pyramid and dietary guidelines, which we will talk about today. But I first want to ask you both, it seems like COVID is the perfect time to talk about nutrition. And yet, Dr. Mills, inside the plant-based world, there's a lot of talk about it. But when you look at national media, there's just not that much talk about nutrition and COVID. Why is that? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's actually really unfortunate. And I think that that is part and parcel of the traditional Western approach to how health is managed, in that we are always looking for the magic pill or prescription to sort of come in and save the day. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons we're so obsessed with superheroes. It's just there's going to be this magic phenomenon that's just going to fix everything and make it right, when we all know in reality it takes a lot more hard work and dedication to really ensure that things work properly. And in fact, the studies show that nutrition plays a tremendous role in our body's ability to not only be resistant to infections, including COVID, but even for these vaccines to do their job. Because what vaccines actually do is train our immune system on how to respond to an infectious agent. But if your immune system isn't functioning well at baseline, a vaccine is not going to be able to train it to do very much at all. So it's really important to have a well-functioning immune system so that the vaccines can do their job. And I think that the study that Dr. Barnard's group has done sort of underscores that.
Dr. Barnard, what would you add? I mean, you came out with the study, you and your colleagues, about the efficacy of vaccines and plant-based diets, and yet this is hardly penetrating the mainstream national media.
Yeah, I think you're raising a really critically important point, and that is that medical practice has a ways to go in order to catch up with the findings of research. And as Dr. Mills mentioned, this it really has been the case for quite a long time. I remember back reading the Lancet, this prominent medical journal, back 1990, three decades ago, and a young researcher, Dr. Dean Ornish, showed that you could actually start to reverse heart disease. In other words, the artery blockages that lead to heart attacks could start opening up again. And he wasn't talking about angioplasty or even medications. He was talking about vegetarian diet, lacing up your sneakers for some exercise every day, reducing stress, throwing away the cigarettes. And he found really remarkable power of this, so much so that Medicare's then said, we'll pay for that for patients to go through the program because it's cheaper and it's over the long run much more effective. And our team has shown that if you don't have heart disease, the same kind of regimen, you know, plant-based diet and so forth, without limiting calories, even if you're not exercising very much, these diet changes bring cholesterol levels way down. They bring blood pressure down. They reduce cancer risk. And I guess what made our name more than anything else was that we started to discover something that I didn't even envision in medical school, was that diabetes could go away. And so what has been happening since in the years since these findings came out is that there has been more and more application of what can diet really do. Apparently it's not this mild force. It's actually a really big thing. And then the second thing is to try to encourage practicing physicians to kind of set down the prescription pad a little more often and to help patients to understand how to adopt a really healthy diet. Now, quick caveat, we're not talking about just taking the skin off your chicken here. We're talking about making big diet changes. But when people do, they get huge results. And then, of course, the COVID results are astounding, that it makes a big difference with regard to COVID.
You know, we have an hour to go over these issues, and we're an independent station, so we can push the envelope here. You know, hearing you both and reading all the data kind of makes me angry that we don't talk about this more. Dr. Mills, let's just be real. What are we up against here? I mean, I was watching the cable shows last night. Every other commercial is for a drug. The United States, I believe, if this is the latest data, the United States and New Zealand are the only countries in the world that allow for big pharma to advertise to the public. Billions and billions of dollars in profits. Healthcare. We spend so much on healthcare, and yet the results compared to other wealthy countries are minimal at best. I mean, it's pretty shameful. So Dr. Mills, the scientific data is out there. Can you talk about what we're up against here?
Sure. Well, I have spent a large part of my medical career and the time and effort that I've invested in the plant-based arena trying to help people understand why being plant-based is so important and actually critical to optimal health. Because for years, literally going back at least 100 years, the research has been showing consistently that the more plant-based a population is, the longer they live, the lower their risk for chronic disease, the more disease resistant they are, the more fully functional they remain throughout their lifetime, and the lower their risk for dementia. And people have kind of looked at that and said, oh, isn't this interesting? That's odd. Well, you know, just try to make sure you have lean meat and eat a few vegetables. And but no one has or very few, I won't say no one, but very few people really step back to look at what that information was telling us. And what it really is telling us is that we as a species are not omnivores. We are herbivores. We are dedicated plant eaters. And it is the when we adhere to that diet that we get all of the just many nutrients, many of which have been characterized, some of which we still have not fully characterized, that our bodies need to function at peak performance. Plant foods are filled with just literally hundreds of thousands of important phytochemicals, compounds, minerals, antioxidants, different types of fiber, so forth, that interact with not only our own cells, but the bacteria in our guts to create a wide variety of compounds that, again, promote the best overall health. And when we aren't consistently eating those foods and ingesting those compounds, our bodies simply can't work at peak performance. We don't have the nutrients we need to be as healthy as we can be. And that's especially true of our immune system. I tell people, your immune system is like the armed forces for a nation. And it's all fine, well, and good to have a Navy, an Army, and an Air Force. But if your Army has rifles that won't shoot, the Navy has ships that, you know, can't sail, and the Air Force has planes that won't fly, then they're useless. And if we have an immune system that does not have the plant-based cofactors it needs to perform their job, our immune system can't protect us the way it should.
Dr. Bernard, what would you add? And can you also can you talk about what we're up against here?
Yes, I think we're up against a couple of things. And you mentioned one. One is money. There's a huge amount of money in pharmaceuticals. And if you want to get depressed, Google the salaries of the CEOs of the major pharmaceutical companies. And it's a sobering thing to see how much money there is in this world. But I don't think that's all there is to it. There's also a big issue of knowledge. We did a study funded by NIH back in 2003, we started. And what we found was that comparing a completely plant-based diet, no animal products at all, to the best current diet, which at that time meant, you know, don't eat too many calories, cut calories to lose weight, limit carbohydrates, and so forth. The plant-based diet turned out to be three times better at controlling blood sugar. And it's when we started to see people able to actually stop using medication altogether. And then around the same time as we did our work, other researchers had found something that was the biggest breakthrough in diabetes since the discovery of insulin, which was the cause of type 2 diabetes, which turns out to have nothing to do with having a soda or sugar or bread or starch in general. It has all to do with the buildup of fat particles inside your muscle and liver cells that stop insulin from working. That was a radical new idea. Nobody knew what to make of it. But we started to discover, wait a minute, if like me, you grew up in North Dakota eating hamburgers and pork chops, and that fat builds up inside your cells so that your insulin can't work anymore, and so your blood sugar is building up because your insulin is disabled, then what if I get all those fatty foods out of my diet? Can diabetes be cured? And the answer is yes. So why doesn't every doctor know about this? Well, when a patient with diabetes comes in, sits down, and says, cure me, the doctor says, I can't. You know, you're going to have diabetes for the rest of your life, but I've got a new drug for you. Part of it is that the same people who pay for the TV ads that you saw also pay for continuing medical education courses for doctors. Mm-hmm. And so what is emphasized in medical practice is the latest new drug. Expensive? Yes. There's a reason why your premiums are higher this year than they were last year. That's really drug costs. But if we look a little further at what actually causes these diseases, we find that we can use less medicines, maybe none at all, and can actually address the causes of disease in a way that we were not able to do before.
Is nutrition and these studies now being taught in medical school? Because I'm guessing that when you both went to medical school, this was not taught. Dr. Bernard?
long ways to go, still needed. There's sort of a, it's touched on briefly from a theoretical standpoint, like here is the biochemical structure of vitamin C, but nothing about what do I tell the patient who's got a high cholesterol about how to get it down. And unfortunately, there's a lot of romantic mythology about diet. A Mediterranean diet, doesn't that sound great? Why don't you do that? Well, we actually did a head-to-head study between a Mediterranean diet and a fully plant-based diet. And the Mediterranean diet really sounds great, but just doesn't work very well. But the plant-based diet, it really runs rings around it. So that's why we're promoting it so enthusiastically.
What about the Mediterranean diet doesn't work so well?
We brought in 62 people. They all wanted to lose weight. And we did what we call a crossover trial. Half of the people started one diet, the other half started the other. One group started Mediterranean, the other started vegan. And the Mediterranean diet, what it means is less meat, less dairy, more fish, more olive oil, and that kind of thing. The vegan diet means no animal products, but eat as much as you want of grains and beans and vegetables and fruits. So that means spaghetti and veggie fajitas and bean burritos and that kind of stuff. After 16 weeks, everyone got on the scale. The vegans were losing weight like crazy. The people on the Mediterranean diet just really didn't. Very, very little weight loss. And then because it's a crossover trial, you stop and you switch to the opposite diet. So the people who had been vegan now went Mediterranean. And they thought, isn't that great? Now I can eat a more indulgent diet. But what they discovered is they were putting their weight right back on. The people who had been Mediterranean then started the low-fat vegan diet, plant-based diet. And suddenly, it took a little adjustment of kind of figuring out what can I put on my spaghetti if it's not ground beef. But they started losing weight and their cholesterol started to fall. And at the end of the study, we compared the two and we put all the data together. And the Mediterranean diet does reduce blood pressure. Not huge, but it does. But with regard to weight loss and cholesterol control, it really doesn't do anything at all. It's effectively a placebo. And that's surprising because everyone thinks, wouldn't it be nice to sit on the coast of Tuscany, drinking a glass of red wine, looking at the sunset, thinking I'm helping my waistline. But in reality, it's more of a romantic notion than an effective diet.
So in addition to weight loss, you looked at cholesterol and blood pressure?
That's right.
Today, we are talking about the benefits of plant-based diets and the research behind them. Later in the show, we'll talk about access. We'll also talk to our guests about their study that looked at racial bias that led to the U.S. government pushing for dairy products. Dr. Neil Bernard is adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine in Washington, D.C., and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Dr. Milton Mills practices critical care and internal medicine in the Washington, D.C. area and is a member of the board of directors of Plant-Based Prevention of Disease. If you have any questions or comments about just adding more vegetables and fruits to your diet, and if you have done that recently and you'd like to share your results, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Well, here's a great email from a listener. My mother is a vegetarian. My girlfriend is a vegetarian. Everyone around me is a vegetarian, but I'm still addicted to red meat. I'm drinking more non-dairy milk, but I cannot kick the red meat. Please convince me. Dr. Mills, do you want to take that one first?
I actually wanted to offer a comment on the previous question about the role of nutrition in medical schools because
oh sure
yeah I have a classic anecdote that encapsulates where the problem lies. When I went to medical school that I was interested in the relationship between chronic disease and diet. And I told that to an interviewer when I was interviewing in Boston, and he listened patiently. And then he looked at me and said, well, you know, you don't want to end up like the dentist. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, they fluoridated the water and now they have no patients. And I was horrified and it showed on my face. And he tried to explain it away by saying, well, you know, what I mean is, in Western medicine, we are in the business of treating sick people. We are not in the business of trying to keep people from becoming sick. And And that's true enough as far as it goes. And when you look at the origins and development of Western medicine, which really started to come into its own in the mid 19th century, that was during a time when the major killers of human beings in Western nations were infectious and communicable diseases, trauma, and so forth. And those were diseases where you looked for a cause that you could treat with, you know, some sort of procedure or drug. But things have radically changed now. And the things that are killing most people are things that are directly related to the way people are eating and the fact that they are eating the wrong types of food. And the best way of dealing with those diseases are to prevent them rather than trying to cure them, because our best procedures don't cure these diseases. They just alleviate to some degree the symptoms at best. And that the crossover study Dr. Barnard just alluded to again underscored what I was saying earlier, that we really are plant-based creatures. And when we adopt a plant-based diet, our body responds very, very quickly and in a very pronounced and marked fashion. Now, to the young lady's question about difficulty getting off red meat, I can say from my own experience that I've been there. I felt that. I grew up in a family where you know, my parents were from the South. We grew up eating, you know, all the typical types of meat that people eat in America. And when I confronted the idea of becoming plant-based, I didn't think I could do it. I just didn't think I could live without having, you know, a hamburger, a piece of steak, or some chicken every now and then. But I ultimately made my decision for reasons that may seem odd to some people. As a Seventh-day Adventist, in my interaction with God through prayer, he made it clear to me that and continuing to include meat in my diet was interfering with my spiritual health and my ability to communicate with him. And so for that reason, I said, well, I got to let this stuff go. But what quickly became clear to me was that what I thought was so necessary and so important was really simply an addiction and an ingrained habit. Because once I stopped, I lost the desire to do it. And so what I remind people when I speak to audiences is that nobody asks for fried chicken, ice cream, or pork chop in the delivery room. We, as babies, are born without preferences. Everything that we think we like, somebody taught us to like. Mm-hmm. And just like we learn to like these things, we can unlearn those detrimental habits and adopt new ones. And I also ask people, are you in a relationship? And everybody says, yes, I'm in a relationship. I say, are you in a relationship with the first person you fell in love with? And people say, no. And I say, well, think back to that first person you were in love with. There was a time you thought you could live without them, and then they did something stupid, and you said, why am I with this person? It's the same thing with your diet. Think of that diet as that first boyfriend or girlfriend you had to kick to the curb because you realized they weren't good for you. Let that diet go. And once you let it go, believe me, you'll be happier and healthier for it.
Before we go to break, Dr. Barnard, what would you add? How would you address that question?
I think, well, it's a great question. It's a question that everybody has. And people are right to be skeptical about a diet change because there's all kinds of diets out there. But the first question is, what do you want to change? What do you want to get better? So the people who come in to see us typically want to lose weight and they don't want to be punished with typical diets. Or they want to get their diabetes better or maybe get rid of it. Or they had a family member who had cancer or heart disease and they don't want to have some future problem like that. So if you're clear as to what it is, that's important. Then the question is, how do I actually do this? And here's what I would recommend. I would recommend don't make any long-term plan. Break it into two steps. Step one, take a week. And during this week, check out the possibilities. What would I eat for breakfast if I wasn't eating animal products at all? Okay, instead of cow's milk on my cornflakes, I could try almond milk, but I don't know if it's any good, so go to the store and try it. Veggie sausage, is that any good? I don't know. Go to the store, try that one. For lunch, for dinner, think about what you would have. You go to your favorite Italian place, and instead of meat sauce on your spaghetti, I guess you could try the tomato sauce, or, you know, and you're at Taco Bell, and instead of the meat taco, you have the bean burrito. So you're taking a week, and step one is just to identify the foods that you might like, and you're not giving anything up yet. Then after a week, you got a pretty good list of vegan foods that work for you and even at restaurants. Then step two is take 3 weeks and do a 3 week test drive, all vegan all the time. No long-term commitment. You're just going to see what it's like. And if you avoid animal products and keep greasy foods pretty low, after 3 weeks, two big things are going to walk right in your front door. And the first is you have lost weight. If you have diabetes, your blood sugar is falling. You're feeling better. Your digestion is better. Physically, you are a different person that fast. Second, you got a long way to go still, but you'll feel physically much better. Secondly, you haven't had chicken wings in 3 weeks, and you discover that although you thought you loved them, you kind of stopped thinking about them. Partly that's because there's a lot of other cool products to try nowadays, and your friends and family are all doing the same thing. There's a million things to eat, and you're never hungry. So break it into two steps. 1 week, check out the possibilities. 3 week test drive, you'll be sold. If you have a goof up later on, don't worry about it. Dust yourself off. Get back on the wagon.
If you need some extra support, Dr. Bernard, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine just launched One Health World. It's a free 6-week online program. It includes food demonstrations and nutrition talks. And I love that the program is available in English, Spanish, French, and Mandarin.
Yes, we are indeed one world. Part of that is because the U.S. keeps exporting unhealthy foods to all the corners of the globe. A little tongue-in-cheek, but that's kind of the way it is. Mm-hmm. We all need to get healthy together. And it's not just health. Let's face it. People are changing their diets for other reasons. Kind of as Dr. Mills mentioned, some people are doing it for compassionate reasons. Some people are environmentalists who say, I've read the articles. You know, I think it's time for us to break some pretty big habits here. So we started One Healthy World to really help people, regardless of where they are, to change. And if people want more information, it's just pcrm.org. That's our Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. pcrm.org/One Healthy World. Join a program and see what happens.
And you can find the link at yourcallradio.org. That is Dr. Neil Bernard, adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine in D.C. and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Dr. Milton Mills practices critical care and internal medicine in the D.C. area and is a member of the board of directors of Plant-Based Prevention of Disease. Today, we're continuing our mini-series on health by talking about the benefits of a plant-based diet. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will take your phone calls and your emails. We're getting a lot of calls and a lot of emails. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Yesterday, we talked about the most effective ways to deal with stress. You can find that at yourcallradio.org. Tomorrow, we are bringing back Gina Bria and Dr. Dana Cohen to discuss their book, Quench, Beat Fatigue, Drop Weight, and Heal Your Body Through the New Science of Optimum Hydration. This got an amazing response last year, so we're bringing them back to take your calls. And today, we are talking about the benefits of a plant-based diet. There is so much scientific research out there on everything from lowering the risk of cancer, heart disease, and strokes, and then diet, a plant-based diet can play a very big role with menopausal symptoms and arthritis. You can find links at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Dr. Milton Mills and Dr. Neil Bernard. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We've got a number of people who've been waiting patiently. So let's go to William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. I have to say, when someone begins to talk about armies and Navy making analogies that they're not going to work and starts talking about God told them to do something, right away, I'm sorry, I begin to have doubts. With respect to the plant-based diet, there's a difference between people who eat a lot of vegetables and people who treat meat like it's the devil himself. One of the great problems of the advocates of the vegetarian diet when they, in my opinion, and I'm a physician myself, is when they cite the benefits of the vegetarian diet, they neglect to mention that the person who goes to all the trouble of going on a vegetarian diet is probably also doing a whole lot of other things that are good for their health. They don't smoke, they exercise, and a whole lot of things. And yet they don't try to sort it out. Even Dean Ornish didn't try to sort it out, because he had meditation and a whole bunch of other things besides his diet recommendations. So therefore, I'm not convinced. I'm certainly not convinced that having some chicken every other day, like one of the fellas said, that's terrible for you. That'll put you in your grave right away. You know, the Eskimos don't eat, the Inuits don't eat vegetables, and yet they're not falling over dead.
Well, thank you for the call, William. And I should say that all of the information that Dr. Mills brings to the show is based on scientific research. Dr. Mills, do you want to respond to William?
Yes, I do. So first, let me address the simplest one to take is the reference to the Inuit. Because the studies that were done years ago on the Inuit who were living an authentic Inuit lifestyle showed that the average life expectancy for Inuit people living a traditional lifestyle was about 45 years of age, and then they died. So I don't think that is something that we would recommend for people nowadays. So there's that. Secondly, the next thing he said was that, well, he suggested that there are lifestyle factors that segregate with dietary choices that confound the dietary choices. In other words, the people who are adopting the plant-based diet are also not smoking and so forth, and that's what's really conferring the health advantages to them. Well, that can be addressed by looking at the Adventist health studies, because within the United States, within the Seventh-day Adventist church congregation, approximately half of the church membership is plant-based. The other half is not. They continue to eat meat and dairy, but none of them smoke, none of them drink. And within that group, it has been shown again for more than 30 years that those who are plant-based are much healthier, have much lower risk for all-cause mortality, less cancer, less heart disease, less dementia, less diabetes. So again, that issue has been addressed and answered, and those confounding variables have been accounted for. And then with respect to his statement that, a little bit of chicken every other day is not going to be harmful, in Dr. Colin Campbell's seminal study, the China study, he looked at the population across China, which, again, the reason that's important is because you are now looking at a genetically homogeneous population. So you can essentially factor out the influence of differing, gene makeup. And what you are now looking at is simply the differences that diet plays within the same gene pool. And what his work showed was that for every incremental increase in animal protein intake, there was an increase in disease seen. There was no threshold effect. So, you know, granted, a little bit of animal protein did correlate with small increases disease risk. However, if you factor that out over a lifetime, that can be significant. And certainly when you factor it out over a population, it becomes very significant. And I'd also like to get Dr. Barnard's take on that as well.
Yeah, it's just very briefly. The answer for us as physicians is randomized trials. Because I think the caller did raise a good question. There are all kinds of confounders, smoking and all kinds of other stuff. So when we do these studies, what we do is we bring in a whole group of people, we select out the smokers, and we randomly assign them to a dietary intervention and a control group, and then you see how they do. And then you can do a crossover trial where they're doing both interventions and you're comparing the person against himself or herself. And that's, in my view, really the best way to put these things to the test. And you can test a single intervention, like getting rid of animal products versus not. Or you can, if you want, you can test a combination, getting away from animal products and also getting away from fried foods. You can test combinations if you want to, but if you've got a good, well-chosen control group, it gives you the best science.
Well, thank you for the call, William. Let's go next to Marina in San Francisco. Hi, Marina. Thanks for holding.
Oh, hi. Yes. My question, I totally agree that a plant-based, mostly diet is great. I just wanted to ask about fat, because the doctors keep talking about the low fat, but I was under the impression that if you eat healthy fats, like coconut fat, oil that is derived from olives, et cetera, that all of those are good for your health. So, but in the sugars and carbohydrates are not as good for your health, so maybe they can give comments on that.
All right, thank you. Dr. Mills, do you want to take that first?
Well, sure. The certainly, the aggregate research shows that animal fats, particularly the more saturated animal fats, animal fats that because they tend to also include cholesterol, are much more deleterious to our health than plant fats. However, even saturated plant fats and at high levels of intake are have been shown to cause long-term or increase long-term health risks. So the question is, what is that cutoff? How do we define elevated intake? And again, I think the studies suggest that once dietary fat goes above 20 to 25% as a percentage of daily caloric intake, that correlates with increases in disease. So that would mean that I think ideally people should try and keep the amount of fat in their diet to somewhere around 10 to 15%, 20% max, that it be comprised of plant fats, primarily the mono and polyunsaturated fats. And even then, you want to try and stay away from a lot of purified oils and to the extent that you are using fats, get them as whole plant foods. So you're eating, including them in the forms of nuts, seeds, and perhaps foods such as avocados and so forth. And with respect to carbohydrates and sugars, there's been a lot of confusion about that because of the so-called keto craze and low carb craze. And I want to be clear with everyone that all the studies that have looked at low carb diets, keto diets, have shown that they increase risk of dying. They increase disease risk. The problem with carbohydrates is not carbohydrates. It is processed carbohydrates. That is, carbohydrates that have been processed to remove their fiber and to turn them into just pure starch or pure sugar. When plant carbohydrates are eaten in their whole original unprocessed form, they are the healthiest foods that we can eat. So that is why you hear over and over this emphasis and focus on whole, that is WHOLE, plant foods, because that means you're eating the plant foods with the fiber intact. And that will modulate the absorption of the starch and sugar so that you don't get the glycemic disruptions and problems with blood sugar control and so forth. Plus, you get all of the benefits of the plant fibers that are naturally in those foods.
All right. Well, thank you for that question. And we're almost out of time. So let's have Dr. Bernard take the next question from Francis in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call, doctor and the panel. I'm just a little disturbed and disappointed how, from a top-down view, Dr. Anthony Fauci and some of the people in the media, Gottlieb and Dr. Walensky, they're not emphasizing enough nutrition or exercise or a focus on building one's immune system. Wouldn't this be a pleasant change of events? Thank you.
Thank you. We briefly touched on this in the beginning, but Dr. Bernard, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. There were two seminal studies that came out in 2020, both showing that people who follow plant-based diets, you don't just have lower risk of heart disease and cancer, but the risk of severe COVID is cut quite dramatically, and the efficacy of a vaccination is increased. So plant-based diets are helping us in surprising ways. Our research team took advantage of the pandemic to do some research for women who were at home suffering with hot flashes after menopause. And to our surprise, the combination diet would not only help their hearts and their waistlines, but it made their hot flashes go away. And this was kind of in line with William's question earlier. It was a plant-based diet plus limiting oils and making sure that soybeans were a big part of the diet. And we noticed that moderate to severe hot flashes were cut by 84%. Why does that matter? Because our approach to COVID now is pretty much wait until people are sick, and then we stick them in our intensive care units that are getting jammed up. And the public health efforts that we've made are good, but we can do better than that. And that's an analogy for how we've dealt with diabetes, heart disease, cancer. We wait till cancer shows up on the mammogram. We wait till the heart attack comes into the emergency room. We can treat these things, in parentheses, in advance by recognizing what causes them, dealing with it, and helping people. Like me, I grew up in North Dakota. I ate meat every day, and my first job was at McDonald's, to kind of rethink what's on our plate, find ways to love it more. And it can not only revolutionize your own health, but it can help your family and your kids to live better, too.
Well, thank you for that question. I wish we had more time, but can we spend some time talking about the research that you all did looking at the racial bias that led the U.S. government to push for dairy products? I mean, this was back in 1999. Dr. Mills, I mean, hearing both of you talk about the benefits of these diets, I was just reading a piece from Stat News. Researchers fear people of color may be disproportionately affected by long COVID. I mean, we've done so many shows about how communities of color have been so affected by COVID. And Dr. Mills, the last time, I think this was the last time you spoke in person because of COVID, you were advocating for a plant-based diet in front of the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee meeting. And you said that, you know, you just came out and said dairy is racist. So can you talk more about that?
Sure. We have known from population studies and research for, again, over 100 years that persons of color are much more likely to be intolerant of the sugar that is in dairy foods, lactose, than Caucasians. So the numbers are 95% of Asian Americans, about 75% of African Americans, 74-75% of Native Americans, and about 53% of Hispanic Americans are lactose intolerant, or more correctly, lactase non-persisters, than Caucasian Americans, where the prevalence is only around 30-33%. So that means that whenever Americans of color ingest dairy products, they are going to develop gastrointestinal distress from the inability to digest and absorb the sugar that's in the milk. And so by encouraging Americans of color to consume dairy, the government is doing so knowing that it's going to make us sick. And for no benefit, because the chief reason that dairy foods are pushed upon the American public is their alleged benefit for skeletal health. Yet study after study after study has never shown that calcium from milk helps protect human beings against osteoporosis. It just doesn't happen. In fact, the Harvard Nurses Health Study showed that the women who drank the most milk had the highest risk for hip fracture worldwide. Dairy consumption correlates with incidence and prevalence of osteoporosis and hip fracture. And even if you look at just nature as being sort of the largest and longest ongoing experiment that we have, when you look at mammalian development throughout nature, mammals do not build their adult skeletons by drinking their mother's milk. They typically build their adult skeleton eating their normal diet. And so there's really no reason to consume dairy in terms of trying to protect our bones. And so we're being told to consume this product not for our benefit, it's really for the benefit of the dairy industry, which lobbies very, very heavily to keep the government recommending the consumption of these products, which not only don't promote bone health, but also because of their saturated fat content, raise the risk for heart disease, and also are a major contributor to prostate cancer risk and breast cancer risk and so forth.
Dr. Bernard, what changes do you see in your patients when you suggest that they don't eat as much dairy or remove dairy from their diets?
Well, we don't suggest that they cut down. We suggest that they break up with it because although that sounds a little bit stricter, it's actually easier to not tease yourself with the thing that you're kind of hooked on. So if you're a smoker, it's actually easier to just quit than it is to try to limit yourself a little bit. So the changes we see are weight loss starts on day one, if a person has excess weight. And then they tip, if they have a fair amount of weight, they'll lose about a pound per week. So they're gradually shedding the weight. Cholesterol levels come down very rapidly and diabetes gets under control extremely rapidly as well. And then the hormonal changes are remarkable. We've seen not only the hot flashes just getting wiped out. It's been an amazing thing that we've seen recently, but for years, we've been looking at the other end of the reproductive window in young women who have endometriosis or other causes of severe menstrual pain. And you found that by a diet change, its ability to adjust estrogen activity, these things improve too. So it's been surprising to see not only the power that foods have, but sort of the range of conditions that can be improved.
We're going to do an entire show about this, but Dr. Mills, we have about a minute left or a minute and a half. What about food deserts and what it will take to ensure that healthy food is available to more and more people, especially in communities that do not have access to stores that sell fruits and vegetables?
Sure. So a food desert is defined as an urban area where a major supermarket that routinely stocks fresh produce is not available within a 10-mile radius. And that's important because generally the people living in those areas don't have their own cars. They may not have good public transportation. And that would mean that means getting back and forth to a place where they can access a supermarket is just difficult to impossible. And so some of the ways that people are trying to deal with food deserts is by having mobile farmers markets that come and set up in the area one or more times during the week. People are trying to build in provisions in the upcoming farm bill to subsidize those kinds of mobile farmers markets. We're encouraging more intra-neighborhood growth of fruits, vegetables, and so forth, so that people start growing their own foods, and just raising the level of consciousness about the importance of including a lot of fresh vegetables and so forth in the diet so that people will find ways to include these foods in their diet and to gain access to them.
Dr. Bernard, anything to add in our remaining minute?
Yeah, I don't think that new stores necessarily need to be built in these areas. They should be, and it would be great. But while that's happening, if the stores that are there would stock grains and beans and vegetables and fruits, that means a bag of rice, a bag of dried beans, maybe some frozen little bricks of broccoli and things like that. It doesn't have to be fancy. Those are the healthy foods, and they don't cost so much. What we have to do, though, is to change the SNAP program, the food stamps program, so that instead of being rewarding the retailers for selling sodas and chips and candy and junk and Slim Jims, if it only covered foods that we are proud to sell, I mean healthy plant-based foods, the world would be a much better place.
Well, I have to say thanks to everyone who called in today, and I'm sorry we didn't get to all of your questions. We really were bombarded with emails. We could barely keep up. One listener said, please bring these guests back for part two. So I hope that both of you will be able to join us again. Dr. Neil Bernard is adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They just launched One Healthy World. It's a free 6-week online program. It includes food demonstrations and nutrition talks, and it is in English, Spanish, French, and Mandarin. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. Dr. Milton Mills practices critical care and internal medicine in the Washington, D.C. area and is a member of the Board of Directors of Plant-Based Prevention of Disease. Dr. Bernard and Dr. Mills, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can find more information about the studies that we cited today and the work of today's doctors at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Chris Nooney for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. We're going to continue talking about health tomorrow with Gina Bria and Dr. Dana Cohen, authors of Quench, Beat Fatigue, Drop Weight, and Heal Your Body Through the New Science of Optimum Hydration. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.